Beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, so delighted and honored to be your host today. And yes, you know our commitment here at Advanced Living Radio to bring you things that make your life better and things that are easy to implement, things that really support you, and some of the ways that you may not have considered, which is what we call sneaky elegance. We're going to sneak up on you sometimes with something, and then at the end you kind of go, wow, that was really neat. And of course, the show is brought to you by AdvancedLiving.com, which features the Comfort Clock. So to keep the show on the air, we invite you to take a moment sometime and go to AdvancedLiving.com and learn about the Comfort Clock, something that Jack Canfield, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Daniel Brinkley, so many doctors are loving, because when they plug in this clock with an attitude, it's a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, and what it does is it changes the energy around you so that life gets better and stress goes down. Well, on with the show. We are in for such a treat today. We have Dr. Janice Ellen Bass, and many of you I know have precious, precious pets in your life. And one of the things about them is so wonderful an energy that they bring of love and compassion. And, oh, doesn't it matter to us that we can not only have that in our lives, but what if we could extend the amount of time that we get that precious love? Because, you know, as our pets, if they get ill and they're hurting, it's just so hurting in our hearts, and it can also cost us incredibly financially, because we'll do anything for those hurting pets. Well, what if there was a way that you could actually extend their life and feel good about the whole process? Well, we're in for a treat today, because Dr. Janice Ellen Bass has spent 20 years as a doctor of chiropractic. 15 of those 20 years, she was adjusting animals as well, and did 4 years of nutritional training. Well, she went through a transformation, and she is now the owner, president, and chef. Well, that's a lot of hats she wears, of Lucky Dog Cuisine, okay? And she basically is going to tell us a bit of her story about what led her to actually doing some important things for the care of her pets, and then, thanks to some members of her life, has been coerced and now is willingly sharing this with all of us. So before we go too far off course, I want to invite Dr. Janice on, and welcome to Advanced Living Radio.
Oh, thank you, Kenneth. It's always good to be here. What you were talking about in terms of having animals live longer with a natural diet is certainly something supported by myself and many other people in the industry. And I certainly have always been very interested in cooking for both myself and my animals. And even way back when my kids were little, we used to make our own baby food. And I was saying, geez, that was before the days of the food processors. And I was out there using food mills and making my own baby food and putting it into ice cube trays, etc. So I strongly believe in unprocessed, healthy, whole foods for all of my family. And certainly my dogs are an important part of that.
Yes. Now, you mentioned in your work, I was reading, that you went through an experience in a period of time where you bought into the research, because there's so much research out there and the general opinion in the veterinary world about the processed food, the dry bags of dog food or whatever is just fine. And would you kind of go into a little bit about that, kind of help get us up to speed about what turned your life around in terms of that way of thinking?
Well, At the time, I was cooking for my dogs very, very much religiously and happy to do so. And when we bought two large dogs, the breeder, who was also a veterinarian, knew that I was really busy in my chiropractic practice and said, you know, Janice, you don't really need to be torturing yourself this way. You know, people have spent a lot of research and time into commercial feed, and you'd be fine to feed these large dogs that were both 70 pounds. They were standard poodles. A commercial pet food, and against my better judgment, I started to feed them some commercial feed. And I mean, it was a good quality food, and it was fine. And I did that for not quite a year, and one of my dogs, through no fault of the food, mind you, developed Addison's disease. Addison's disease is a disease of the adrenal glands that sit on top of the kidneys, and the kidneys don't produce enough of the hormones that are needed to help the body to cope with stress, to deal with changes in the environment. And poor Storm was losing weight and getting muscle cramping. And within a week, she had what's called an Addisonian crisis, where she was a normal, happy 60-pound dog and went down to almost 30 pounds. She had lost about 50% of her body weight in about 10 days, and it was frightening. Addisonian crises are pretty scary. So naturally, we had lots of blood work done and lots of being in the vet hospital and having to be on intravenous and whatnot. And I just thought, if it were any other member of my family also, what would I do to help her body's chance to heal? And I knew that I needed to get her off of the processed foods. So I went back to feeding her my cooked, prepared meals that I do for my animals, and I just felt so much better doing that. Storm, again, Addison's disease is not from food. It's a genetic disease, and it's passed on through the bloodline, so it certainly wasn't due to the food. But I knew that a good quality food was going to help her body to work more efficiently, because naturally always health comes from the inside out, and a good, healthy diet helps to provide nutrients that the body can use to help itself to heal and regenerate. So I ended up putting her on my food, and she did gain her weight back, and she was placed on hormones so that her body that wasn't producing those hormones, they were supplemented, but that was all part of that disease process. But she had gone from a very gray color in terms of her coat. She was jet black before, and when I took her back to the groomer and had her trimmed, all that gray fur was gone, and underneath was beautiful black, healthy fur after being placed on a cooked, home-cooked diet. So it was a huge confirmation to me that we were certainly on the right track of providing good food for her.
Wow.
That was really dramatic, and I think never again.
And now, how old was Storm when she came down with that condition?
About a year and a half. A year and a half old, and because her Addison's was so severe, she had to go on medication. A lot of dogs, you can actually help them with simple diet changes depending on the severity, but hers was pretty severe, and they didn't expect her to live all that long, and she just made it past her 10th birthday, so that was pretty dramatic for a Addisonian dog in her condition, and she had such a bad case of it. So we were really happy to have had her live a long and healthy life.
Okay. And now, I mean, because we have to remember, is it, what, one dog year is about 7 human years or something like that?
Well, it goes something like that. It's interesting to note, though, certainly that dogs' lifespans have been decreasing over the last 40 years is a great quote from Ann Martin's book, who did an amazing job of researching into what was in commercial pet feed, and she has found that over the last 40 years there's been about an 18% decrease in the average lifespan for dogs and cats in the United States, and that certainly is supported by Dr. Strombeck, who's a veterinarian who wrote a book on cooking for your dogs, and both of them feel very strongly that it has to do with a lot of the processed foods that we've been feeding them.
Okay, so I guess you're bringing out something that to me is so very important, because not only did a dog that was with a serious health condition at a young age live 10 more years, but if I heard you correctly, these were healthy years, years where
yes.
she enjoyed her life and you got to enjoy her and each other. And
definitely. And she was a very, very sweet dog. And they tend to have a lot of other immune system diseases, Addisonian dogs. So we were very fortunate to have her last as long as she did. But it's always interesting to see that we've had dogs, my family have had dogs forever, and we always had them last 17, 18, 19 years. That was pretty standard. And it was always standard for us to cook for our animals. We just thought that that was the normal thing to do. As I was saying earlier, Kenneth, we are Eastern European. My family is Ukrainian in our background, and we love to cook and we love to eat. So it was just so much fun to be able to feed them a natural diet. And I look at now, even when I take my my dogs in the evening and I feed them their dinner, I feed them twice a day, but they get so excited, and it really feels good to be able to put down a dish that I know exactly what is in it. I know the quality of the ingredients. I know that nothing in it is processed, and there's no preservatives or other additives in it. Because naturally, when I researched what was in commercial food, I should say, I was appalled, absolutely appalled.
Huh. Wow. And see, that kind of makes me wonder, because I had heard that, in a wake, that some of the commercial pet food was actually superior in quality to a lot of the processed foods that people eat in through the grocery stores. I don't know if you've actually checked that out, but
well, actually, commercial dog food is interesting because they can say, people, the dog food companies can say there's no added preservatives or no added chemicals, but the quality of the raw materials in commercial dog food is very questionable, as well as the cooking process. What is typically in commercial pet feed is, you know, you have to have a rather strong stomach to hear it, but it is anything that's not fit for human consumption is allowed in pet food. So there is something called the 4D animals. I don't know if you've ever heard of this expression, but it's
no.
Dead, diseased, disabled, and dying animals are allowed in, legally allowed to be placed in pet food. So they even used diseased lungs, liver, hooves, abscesses, tumors, growths of any kind. Even roadkill is allowed in commercial pet feed. Things like restaurant grease and sawdust and blood from the slaughterhouse floor, all of that goes into commercial pet feed. And it's considered to be protein, not exactly high-quality protein, but it is certainly considered to be protein.
Oh.
So that is very, very questionable.
And
then we have the things like meat and animal meal, which is another whole story, the whole rendering process. Have you heard of rendering? Do you know what rendering is?
Well, let's put that out there, because I don't, I don't think we're walking around. I know I haven't in the last week said rendering at least once, so we might want to know, what is rendering?
Yeah. Rendering is a method of cooking, but it also is a way for producers of livestock to still get some money from their livestock, even though they may be animals that, again, aren't fit for human consumption, because everything that's inspected and goes into the grocery stores is one area in terms of quality. But what do they do with those carcasses that aren't fit for that? Most of those go into rendering plants. And a rendering plant will take all kinds of different animals and place them in a big vat to break down and separate the fat from the meat and or from the fat from the other materials, and then it's all spun to remove, and then that other ingredient is placed into vats again and heated again and dried and dehydrated so that it can fit and be pushed into something called an extruding machine. And that's what makes the shape of the little dog biscuits. You've seen them in the round kibble form. That's an extruded feed. So it's poor quality proteins that are cooked at high temperatures. So the protein is broken down and called denatured, so you don't have good quality protein that the dog can absorb. And then it's has to be sprayed on the outside so that the dog will actually eat it, because in that form, the dog won't eat it because it's been so denatured. So they have to spray the outside of kibble to make it palatable. I don't know if you had an animal, but if you've ever opened a bag of commercial dog feed and touch the kibble, oftentimes you'll feel that greasy component to it, and it smells harsh. And those are rendered fats that have been sprayed on the outside of kibble to make it palatable.
Mm.
Pretty frightening.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's animal meal, and that's what goes into a lot of commercial pet feed. So if you ever look on the outside of a bag, and if you see any kind of a meal, whether it's lamb meal, chicken meal, fish meal, those are rendered feeds. So it's very poor quality proteins that have gone through the rendering process. Very harsh, harshly done, and it does strip a lot of the proteins out of the food.
Huh. Ah, okay. Wow. Now, I don't know if there's any quality difference if you get into some of the canned dog foods that are more that terrible. I don't talk about this often. back in college, I was playing around and had some people over, and
you used and pate, the, did you? That was
and I cooked a stew that was. I don't even remember the brand. It was one of the nicer dog foods, and it got really rave reviews.
Oh, that's pretty scary.
Oh, I won't be admitting that too often.
I guess not. Your friends are going to be phoning you up.
That'll keep people coming over inviting to dinner. Don't go to Ken.
Yes, don't eat his pate.
But I didn't know if... because you basically mentioned that the dry foods are pretty nasty, to say the least. And I didn't know if there was any middle ground. I mean, because I want to look, one, of course, we're going to get to the exciting news, which, from what I understand from reading some of the materials, and your website, luckydogcuisine.com, is that right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and for those people who can say cuisine but not spell it, would you help out there?
Sure. It's C-U-I-S-I-N-E.
So the website would be luckydogcuisine.com.
Correct. That's it.
Okay. Because I know we're going to get to the fact that you have been coerced or begged and pleaded or somehow you've decided to make this available for more than your own dogs.
Well, it was an interesting story, because when I was up in Toronto, where I was from originally and where I had my chiropractic and practice, I was making my own dog food, and my veterinarian up there, who was a great lady, she loved what we had put in the food, and we had discussed a lot of what I'd wanted to put in the food and worked on it. And she had made some suggestions, and we worked on the food. Anyway, she ended up buying from me my commercial or my homemade dog food, as opposed to the commercial feed that she was feeding herself. She ended up feeding my dog food, and she was very sad that I moved down to South Carolina. When we sold our practice up in Toronto, I came down here, and there's a delightful butcher shop up the street, and the butcher's name is Jeff, and I used to go up there and have him custom grind my beef. So he took amazing cuts of beef, and he would freshly grind it for me, but I'd ask for 10, 11 pounds at a time. And I told him what I was doing with it, and he said, that was an amazing idea. He said, if you can package it in a way that I can put on my shelves, I'll sell it for you. So I took it to the South Carolina Department of Agriculture and had it all tested for protein, fat fiber, moisture, and calcium content, and it was perfect. It came out really, really well, so I was delighted. And we started selling it in Jeff's store. So I had all these people who had been asking me prior to this if I could cook for their dogs, or if I could give them the recipe, or if I could somehow, if they could come to my house to get it. Now they don't have to do that. They can actually go to Jeff's and pick it up at his butcher shop. So that has been a lot of fun. So it came about certainly through my love of cooking and my love of dogs, and I had so much demand, and a friend of ours owns a restaurant on Hilton Head Island, and now she has a booming business with a dog menu. So people can come to a restaurant, sit down on a beautiful outdoor patio, and be served a dog menu for their puppies as well.
Oh, my gosh.
It has been so much fun. I've met so many wonderful people and,
wow,
and different opportunities.
A pet-friendly restaurant that has a pet menu featuring Lucky Dog Cuisine.
That's right.
Oh, I'm telling you, 60 minutes, look out.
It has been fun, and they actually offer three of my recipes are on the menu, and then the fourth is considered the nightly special, which is so much fun.
Oh, my goodness. And I know that that there's going to be wonderful testimonials from the dogs that love your food. The only thing about them is that they bark a lot when they're testifying to how good it is. So I guess on your website you've included some of their owners who will translate that barking into words.
That's true. That's very true. I would love to set up a website with something that we'll have to work on, of doing something called the Lucky Dog Dance, because so many people have said that right before they feed their dogs our food, they jump around and do a cute little spin and dance, and we'd love to get a bunch of them on the website. That would be so much fun.
Yeah, because they're over there going, oh, wow, they stopped poisoning me. Look, hooray, I'm getting the good stuff.
Well, it gives me a wonderful sense of satisfaction, though, to know that my dogs are eating such good quality, and I have nothing to worry about. It's wonderful when my kids come home from university and college, and I get a chance to feed them my great food. I feel as excited about feeding my dogs at night. So it is a neat experience.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that great?
And well, you know, so many people these days are talking, and again, another reason this had come to be, so many people said, geez, I don't have time to cook for myself, let alone my dog. So now they can just go to the freezer and pull it out, heat it up a little bit, and away you go, and you're feeding your dog something healthy and good for them.
Right. Now, is this available on your website, or how do people get their hands on this?
Yes, it's available on our website. We have a special happening right now, and if you sign up on our auto ship program, then it just gets automatically delivered every month, which is certainly a great way to make sure you don't run out of food.
Right. And I noticed one of the things in your materials reminds us, if someone came to us and said, would you like to have the same dry cereal every day for every meal for the rest of your life, how many of us would get all excited about that? Like none, right?
It's true. Even though, you know, you might have the best dry cereal in the world, and eating that every day, though, twice a day, is, one, it's not giving you variety. And dogs, just like people, need a variety in their diets, not just the same menu day in and day out. And dry food is probably as far away from the natural diet of dogs as you could possibly get. In the dog food world, there's certainly lots of controversy between feeding raw or feeding cooked, but at least either way, you're giving your dog a natural whole food as opposed to constant processed. And again, if people want to add a little bit of a good quality dry dog food that's human grade and baked in with this food, that's fine. But just an exclusive meal of just dry dog food, yes, it would be like eating one sort of cereal day in and day out. It's pretty boring and not very nutritious.
Yes. Now, you mentioned something about the idea of raw versus cooked.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's a lot of energy going on out there about the movement for people to eat raw foods for the just greater health benefits to that than cooked or processed foods.
Yep.
And I wanted to ask you, I'll get back to the other question after that, but what are you finding in terms of that idea of raw versus cooked for the animals that you work with?
Well, I think that the basis of a raw diet is a great idea. I have known, though, a number of dogs who, for some reason or other, their systems can't tolerate all of the raw ingredients. And that's one of the reasons why, again, I came up with a cooked diet, too. So to allow dogs a chance to have a natural diet and have something that they can digest and absorb. The controversy is that a lot of people compare dogs with their ancestral wolves or animals in the wild, and naturally in the wild they would bring down their prey, and a lot of the times they eat the muscle meat as well as the intestinal and rumen contents or the stomach contents of their prey, and they're getting a raw, naturally, diet in that respect, and they're getting some pre-digested carbohydrates that the herbivore prey would be eating. But a raw diet, dogs have evolved over time, and there certainly has been research from way back in the Pleistocene era, 300,000 years ago, where dogs were actually dug up and they had been fossilized or mummified with their owners, and they saw actually cooked food in the dog's digestive system 300,000 years ago. So certainly their systems have evolved, both glandularly and nervous system-wise, to be able to absorb and digest a cooked diet as well. And dogs have been living with humans for centuries. So they have evolved, and there is controversy as to whether the raw diet can raise what's called the glycemic index, or the body's response to food producing, so that the body will produce its own insulin and glucose. Often if raw is included, it shoots up the blood sugar levels. Dogs can't digest it properly, and it can put stress on the pancreas and on the liver, leading to things like diabetes. So there's that controversy happening with the raw diet as well. And I could go on and on, but... I think that if people find that their dogs are doing well on a raw diet, that's great. At least they're getting, again, whole natural foods, and I think that's wonderful. So whatever works for your animal, if you're finding the raw diet is great, super. If they can't seem to digest it, then try a cooked diet.
Sure, I guess, or a combination of some of both, possibly.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, one of the things we're talking about raw, and in part of the raw thing going on for people, at least in some of the communities that I hang out with, it's vegan and raw. And what I wanted to check in with, because I'm talking to some of those people, and they're wanting their dogs to basically follow a similar path. And
mm-hmm.
we had Dr. Milton Mills, a holistic medical doctor, that went on to say, well, a human being is actually got the digestive system of a carnivore, and they really don't do well eating animal proteins. But we're talking about a different creature, I'm guessing, and I wanted you to put forward some of your information as a doctor and a nutritionist about what you would suggest in terms of raw food being like some meat or no meat, totally vegan, that kind of a thing for the dogs.
Well, there are a number of questions in that dogs are carnivores. They are meat eaters. And certainly their digestive systems are such that they have a very different digestive system than people do, in that people have large and small intestines and they have a longer digestive system. Dogs have a much shorter digestive system, and they need good quality protein and good quality calcium for their bodies to work. They do need a small amount of carbohydrates to allow fiber. Complex carbohydrates and fiber are necessary for dogs. But a strictly vegetarian diet, it can work, but again, I think dogs' digestive systems, again, show that, and they do have carnivore teeth, which again indicates the canine teeth, it indicates that their whole digestive systems are geared towards eating meat. And whether it's raw or cooked is more the issue. And again, some dogs can digest a raw diet, others have a much harder time digesting a raw diet. So again, you have to work with what's best for your dog.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And I like when you just said that because, all right, some people may want to try having their dog be a raw vegetarian diet. And I guess, would you say that the bottom line is the dog really healthy?
Well, yes, and you have to be careful, too, with combining things. For instance, plant proteins in a vegetarian diet are what's called incomplete proteins, and they do need to be mixed with a complex carbohydrate to produce a complete protein. So vegetables, for instance, on its own, without being mixed with either, say, brown rice or a barley or something along those lines or a whole wheat flour, they need to have that combination in order to produce proteins that the dogs can digest. And so that's also important to know. And also dogs will require some form of calcium. So if you're doing a vegetarian-type diet, they will require supplementation with calcium, either in forms of cheese or bone meal or a good quality human bone meal as opposed to a dog quality bone meal. But you do have to be careful when blending the vegetarian meals to make sure they get, one, complete proteins, and two, that they have adequate levels of calcium, which are very, very important for dogs.
Yes. Now, one of the things to clear up, I know Dr. Mills was pointing out that in terms of a vegetarian diet for humans, that green vegetables are a source of a lot of calcium. And one of the examples he gave was an elk that has something like in the range of may grow 40 pounds of antler in a season, which is all bone, and they eat no meat. Now, that's, of course, an animal that's an herbivore.
Right.
And we're talking about a carnivorous animal here, the dog.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure. I wanted to check in with you as a carnivore. Would they be able to digest the greens in a way to get the calcium from them, or would they need that from another source? Because you mentioned milk and bone meal.
Well, with dogs particularly, they have a difficult time extracting calcium from vegetarian sources, particularly when they are raw, because even in the wild, they would eat the stomach contents of their herbivore prey to have a pre-digested grain or vegetable form. So if we're using any kind of a green vegetable, it does need to be either steamed or pureed. So if you want to keep it raw, it needs to be slightly pureed in order for it to be digested properly.
Okay. All right. Now, that's wanted to kind of put that out there. I know that's talking to a small segment, but as people get healthier and they may look at that diet for themselves, I wanted to at least keep pointing out that there's a difference. I mean, we love our dogs, and they have a different digestive system than ours.
They surely do. They certainly do. And even little things that are interesting that most people don't realize, for instance, is that dogs can manufacture their own vitamin C. Unlike people who need to have it put into our diet, dogs actually can make their own. And I think that's really a fascinating part of a dog's physiology. Even the mother dog, while she's feeding her puppies, her body has actually been shown to produce increased levels of vitamin C the puppies, unfortunately, cannot manufacture their own vitamin C while they're nursing, after they finish nursing and they start eating whole foods and complete foods again, then their bodies can start their own production of vitamin C. And I think that's really neat that dogs will do that.
Yes.
And dogs can also produce their own vitamin K, but again, they need some fiber in their gut, in their digestive system, so that the fiber and the existing bacteria or intestinal flora produce vitamin K for the dogs as well.
Ah, okay. Now, what would be delightful is if you were able to tell me that the dogs that have produces vitamin C, that through licking, like us, that they can transfer to us some extra vitamin C.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Then people wouldn't be so worried about getting dog kisses, would they?
Yes. And why are you doing? Well, I don't like it particularly, but I'm getting my vitamin C.
Not sure if it quite works that way, but it's an interesting concept.
All right. Well, more research is needed.
That would be a fun one to research.
Good. Well, I'll take a moment just to pause for a brief commercial break and just to invite our listeners once again to go visit advancedliving.com. And when you go there, take a look under the EMF news with our guest today, Dr. Janice, talking to us about the well-being of dogs. Under the EMF news, there's an article from Colorado State University about how our pets or dogs are even more sensitive to electromagnetic fields than people. And so I would invite you to look into that as well as to take some time and check out the benefits of getting one of these comfort clocks or other of the EMF protection products offered at Advanced Living. And if you mention that you heard it on Advanced Living Radio, you'll be given a 10% discount. So another incentive for you to check this out. And thank you for going there and supporting this program. Now, Dr. Janice, we want to come back and check with you. Now, the food is available, and I'm taking it that you're kind of not doing this in your kitchen anymore, but you're getting a pretty good-sized facility going.
Well, we still keep it to, it's very true, but we still keep it small quantities that we prepare at a time. I'm not big on making large quantities at a time. It's so important to have control over the quality of my raw ingredients, there's no question. And I still inspect all of our products to make sure that it's fresh and again, still have all my meat custom ground and know exactly where everything is coming from. And everything is grown and produced here in the United States. Everything that I use, all my cheeses, my meats, my vegetables, the barley, the rice, everything is grown here in the U.S. Naturally, there's been issues with these with the food recalls, with foods coming from other countries. I just feel it's great to have everything grown here in our country.
Yes, and now there's some questions because we're seeing things out there labeled natural or organic, are those held to a higher standard? Is that actually better, or you know, help guide us? I know you're very particular about what goes into your food.
Well, natural and organic labeling can be confusing. There's no question, and the difficulty is that pet manufacturers or pet food manufacturers are not required to test the raw materials of what they're getting. So nothing that is added, if there's no chemical added, then they can say, well, we don't add any preservatives. But again, if you're using dead, diseased, and dying animals, those are natural, but they are not exactly the best quality. So natural, if you go through and take a look at your labeling, if you see any meal, you know that they're using rendered products. So you don't want to be doing that. And certainly the Association of American Feed Control Officials have a definition for what they consider to be natural. And it is things that are derived from plant or animal. But they talk about the fact that as long as it is produced or cooked in such a way and that it is a natural way of cooking, but they consider rendering to be natural, It's frightening as to what you could be putting in. Just because it doesn't have anything chemically synthetic in it, that is their definition of natural.
Okay, so that's a big caution. So it says natural, and you could they could add to that naturally rendered with dead, diseased, and dying animal parts.
Well, that's right. And that if they have anything that's rendered, then we know that that's again it's natural, but not a great high quality protein. And again, the cooking process in rendering is done at such high temperatures that it does destroy the protein.
Well,
so what's natural is debatable.
Yeah, now, bringing up again this, Dr. Mills, when he was on the program and talking about the importance for humans of a vegetarian diet, he was making mention that that in his opinion, there was actually a lot of what would be considered mad cow disease that wasn't being found, because the cattle are being fed some of this blood and ground up animal parts of dead, diseased, dying animals, and that gets, you know, affects their health, and then that meat is put forward, you know, into our diets, and just to me, I mean, this was kind of like scary because, the potential apparently for the spread of this, and he was making mention that some of the meat processing facilities, that when they went to test their meat, the FDA had come in and stopped them from doing that under the what was it called, the Homeland Security Act, because they could end up creating a panic if enough people realized that the meat quality that most people eat is actually potentially hazardous.
Well, there's no question. Marion Nestle, who's has a PhD in food sciences, has written an amazing book called Pet Food Politics, The Canary in the Coal Mine, and the Chihuahua being the canary in the coal mine, saying that this whole issue of the pet recalls has a huge implication as to the safety of human food as well. If we're not paying attention to what's going into the pet food, then we're not paying attention as to what's going into livestock feed as well, and therefore, eventually, you're right, getting into the human chain. And that is frightening, so we need to pay attention to all aspects of feeding. That's why it's extremely important to pay attention as to what's in and regulate what's in pet food so that it doesn't cross into the human chain, no question.
And then, so we've kind of, in a way, debunked the idea of it says natural on your dog food. That really, unless you have the details of what's going into it, that doesn't mean much. And what about organic?
Organic is difficult to achieve for human foods because there are so many different categories, and certainly the USDA certifies organic foods. And to be 100%, to be considered 100% organic, they have to be every aspect of that food production, from the way the animals are fed to the grains that go in, everything has to be 100% organic. There can't be any genetic engineering. There can't be any use of pesticides, etc. It's very difficult, even from a human perspective. Then there are different grades of that as well. You can have 95% organic, and that can still be considered a certified organic. And then there are things that are made with organic ingredients, and that is another whole issue. And then you have less than 70%, and that's another whole issue. So there are so many different grades of what they consider to be organic. And right now, the AAFCO, which is the standard that labels pet food, haven't really had a chance to deal with this whole issue of organic labeling. So even to mention human grade is debatable on label. So it is something that's becoming a work in progress. I think most people are starting to pay more and more attention to what's happening in the organic food world.
Wow. Okay.
It's the politics involved in food is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Boy, just I'm beginning to become more and more aware of that. And I had heard, I don't know if you'd heard of Danyon Brinkley. Danyon was a former CIA, Central Intelligence Agency.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He was an assassin for them in
the
70s. And picked up a phone line, and it was struck by lightning, and he ended up getting killed. And when he came back, he brought back from the other side information that prophecies have been amazing for a number of years. And just one of the things that he was talking about at a recent talk was that in the House of Representatives, this bill H.R. 875, and if I'm understanding, there's a small portion, apparently it's like 600 pages and maybe two or three paragraphs in this whole thing, would end up making, if this thing is passed, making it mandatory that people only buy and use these genetically engineered seeds that don't reproduce. And you'd have to go through Cargill or Monsanto each year because you couldn't, it would be illegal to actually grow food that produced its own seeds that you could then grow harvest after harvest after harvest. And this to me just, you know, we're talking a little bit about food and this bill, H.R. 875, he was mentioning, which is kind of another scary aspect of that it could be illegal to grow healthy food.
Well, it, you know, nothing surprises me.
Yeah.
Again, it is a huge industry, the food growing industry, and there are going to be lobbyists who are going to push for their companies to be able to make as much money as possible. And there's no question that there is a huge political movement in I think most people assume that our foods are safe and don't really understand the politics behind it. That's why, again, if you ever get a chance to read Marion's book, Dr. Nussle's book, it's frightening. Although
and the name of that book again is?
It's Pet Food Politics by Marion Nussle.
Okay. All right. I have to see about maybe she'd want to be on the program.
Probably would. She's excellent and brings about some very, very interesting and written the book in a way that's easy to read, and she's done a very good job. So, yes, I feel that certainly we have to pay attention.
Right. And I'm just kind of wondering, I don't know, depending, I haven't, checked in about what would it cost, depending upon the size of a dog, to get this kind of quality food. Because, I mean, obviously the care that you put into this and the results of it, I mean, I don't think a person could get better dog food. And you've put intense amount of research into nutritionally balancing it, which, you know, even a caring person in their home, they could make their own pet food, but they might not have all the expertise that you've put into it and all the love. I mean, they could match the love, but they might not be able to match the expertise.
Well, it did take quite a bit of research and testing, and again, we had to take it to the Department of Agriculture to have it tested, and that's certainly a qualification to be able to put this out to market. And certainly people can do things at home, and they can certainly try to cook for them, for their dogs, and it's not like it's something that they can't do. There's wonderful cookbooks out now on how to cook for your dog, and there's lots of information that there wasn't, especially with the advent of the Internet. There's lots of ways of doing some research, but it is time-consuming, and you do have to be careful and make sure the dogs are receiving both, again, the protein and the calcium. And a lot of other dog foods out there don't use the cheeses that I use. Cheese is naturally expensive, and we use all-natural cheeses with no preservatives or binders or additives of any kind. So it does get daunting for some people, but it's really a wonderful process, and if you can feed your dog a natural, balanced diet, it's great. And it is a little bit more money. Naturally, it's going to be a bit more money than feeding commercial dry dog food. And I think that since we talked about what goes into commercial feed to try to keep the cost low and to keep the protein high but low-quality proteins, that you can see why commercial pet foods are cheaper but certainly not the way to go in the long run. And I think you're going to save money on vet bills if you pay a little bit more for good quality food, allow the body a chance to heal and nurture itself. Yeah. You're going to end up spending a lot less in vet bills in the long run.
Dr. Janice, I just want to, you know, echo along with that, because I had talked to a local holistic veterinarian, and that was one of the things that they said was if the people invested in the highest quality pet foods, that they were going to end up not putting that same money into vet bills. And when I talk to some people and I hear, okay, my dog came down with this or my cat with that, and that these vet bills can be thousands of dollars.
It's very, very true. And just simple things like hot spots. When we moved down to South Carolina from Toronto, we went to investigate a new vet, and the vet automatically gave me a little vial and said, here, this is for when your dog develops hotspots. And I said, excuse me? And we've lived down here for 6 years now, and I've never seen a single hotspot. So, yes, you're absolutely correct. You can certainly save yourself a lot of money by investing in good quality foods, both for yourself and for your animals.
Yeah, and to me, having had some pets and anguished when they were ill. I mean, because that's like a family member being ill.
Definitely.
I mean, to me, putting that money that I've put into getting them healthy after they got sick, or something else that I'd like to make mention of. I know I had a litter of puppies, and I didn't personally, but my dog did. And
what kind of puppies were they?
I should give credit where credit is
yes.
due. it was a combination. It was she was Irish Setter, and
Beautiful.
the handsome gentleman was a Gypsy. one of the things that had happened, the veterinarian ran out of canine parvo vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
Gave one of the dogs feline parvo vaccine, and she ended up ill. And I know, kind of as we're wrapping up here, you have something, you know, to make mention of about vaccinations.
Well, you know, I tend to be a bit of a purist in that my philosophy is that the body heals itself, and that I think that we should have a lot more faith in our body's ability to heal and reproduce and regenerate tissues and cells, and that's its natural state. And if we nurture that whole concept that the body can heal itself and not live in fear of all the bugs and germs and viruses out there and do what we can to promote a healthy internal environment, then we'll be a lot more resistant to infection. So with that basic philosophy, I feel that, for instance, my kids have never been vaccinated because we feel that the body can cope with these things. Now, you and I probably had mumps and measles and did just fine, and so I allowed my children not to be vaccinated against those things. And my kids are now, again, here's going to be dating myself, but my kids are 24 and 21, and they've never been vaccinated, never had an antibiotic in their system, never had an ear infection, no strep throats. They were healthy and well. Vaccines tend to create an unnatural way that the body receives an infection. You're ending up placing this virus into the bloodstream, which is not the way the body would normally encounter a foreign protein. Normally you would either swallow it or inhale it. And so the body has a very specific set of things that it does to combat that infection. So you're putting a trauma and a shock to the system when you give it a vaccine, and sometimes the response can be an incomplete response. The body can go into a little bit of shock, it's panicked, doesn't know what to do, and therefore creates a reaction that may not be what we want in terms of immunity. So I just feel that the less we can vaccinate, the more we can put into our bodies to help it to do what it does do naturally, the better off we're going to be.
Wow. Well, and you didn't mention, cause some of the health professionals that I work with are very concerned about the heavy metal toxicity.
Yes.
that is in vaccines and the rate. I guess we don't talk about autism in animals, but there's been a huge increase in autism that a number of the doctors that I connect with basically track a good amount of that to the mercury content of a number of the vaccinations that these children are getting. And I don't know if that's a factor for animals.
It's true. It's I know that my son, being again 21, his generation has had an increased episode and incidence of Crohn's disease because of the measles and mumps vaccines that they were giving, so that the body again created an incomplete response. So instead of burning off the virus and you seeing it on your skin in terms of the rash that mumps and or measles particularly creates, it would stay dormant within the bowel and create lesions within the bowel that could eventually lead to Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. So it can happen with our animals as well. The more we interfere with what's natural, I think we're just making guesses, and we don't know specifically what the long-term effects are going to be and what other side effects that there are going to be with all these vaccines. So just try to keep it natural. Try to do what we can to allow the body to heal itself.
Yes. Now, one more reminder of your website that people can go to learn more about you and this wonderful food. What would that be, Dr. Janice?
It's luckydogcuisine.com.
Yes. That's wonderful. Well, I just want to take time to thank you for joining us on the program and helping to open our eyes because in the midst of all the economic and global crisis, we need our pets to be healthy more than ever.
That's right, and it's such a simple, inexpensive way to keep them healthy by feeding them healthy, good quality foods. It's the kindest thing you can do for them.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you, thank you. I just wish you great success and invite our listeners to go to LuckyDogCuisine.com website and put this to the test and get more happy pet dances in your house.
I agree, and thank you so much for having me, Kenneth.
You're welcome.
Delighted to have been part of it, and hopefully people will learn something about healthy living for their dogs.
Exactly, and dear beloved listeners, wish you a wonderful week and invite you to tune in again next week for another fun adventure on Advanced Living Radio. Until we meet again, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let's go, let's go, let's go.